welcome to No Planet B, a podcast where we're talking about climate change and its effects on planet A. I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Brianna. This week, we're talking about bean water.
Hot bean juice.
Yep.
My favorite thing.
I welcome... drink bean water every day. I don't know about you guys.
Welcome, everyone. We've decided to do a little change of pace. We're no longer a climate change podcast. We're a coffee podcast.
Yep.
All right, Brie, what are you drinking today? What are you sipping on?
My bean water has a little bit of half and half in it, I guess. I don't know. What? Is that a crime?
It's not a crime, but it's just not. That's good. No, that's. Let me readjust my answer. That sounds good.
Aw, thanks.
I'm over here sipping on some.
ASMR.
Some ASMR. That's a I think it's an Onyx Ethiopia, I think. So it's got notes of peach, something else, and climate change in it.
I love that.
Thank you. yeah, that one's not gonna please scientists or people who like coffee, so I don't know why I did that one. But yeah, so today we're talking about coffee production and how it's going to be affected by climate change. We're going to be talking about a lot of things, but that's probably the biggest topic that we are planning on talking about. This is a really fun study to read, actually. It's called Some Like It Hot, The Influence and Implications of Climate Change on Coffee, Bearer, Borer, and Coffee Production. And so I'm going to go ahead and start off the conversation by explaining how coffee production works in the most basic way. Because there's no reason that, you know, I feel like most people would know how exactly coffee production works. So basically there are these shrubs, and on these shrubs that grow little fruit, like cherries. And in the cherries, the seed, and that seed is coffee beans, and they come out and they're green. They look like little green beans. And these shrubs grow in usually tropical and subtropical regions, usually like 3,000 feet above sea level, if I'm thinking correctly. But yeah, so these plants have very specific growing environments, and there are a lot of predictions about kind of what's going on with them and how climate's going to affect these growing environments. Basically, there are going to be what's called abiotic stress on these coffee plants, so things like temperature, rainfall, moisture. The IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, is predicting about 1.4 to 5.8 degrees Celsius increase in the mean global temperature by the end of the 21st century. And a lot of models forecasting that in equatorial East Africa, they're going to be getting 5 to 20% increase in rainfall from December to February, 5 to 10% decrease from June to August. And with climate change, there are going to be more intense El Nino events that can lead to more drought and extensive flooding. So like just a ton of different things. They gave some estimations about, Arabica having to be moved 167 meters in altitude for every 1 degree Celsius of increase in temperature in order to maintain the same exact level of productivity and quality. And so one thing I mentioned just there was Arabica. That's a species of coffee. Basically, there are two species of coffee, and it's kind of funny to read about, but one is Arabica, and one is Robusta. Oh. You don't really need to know the names, but what's up?
I just don't like the term Robusta. I don't know why.
It doesn't sit well.
It doesn't sit well with me, no.
That's a natural reaction, because apparently no one likes Robusta. Arabica is 70% of the world's production of coffee. It's more susceptible to pests. They need more attention. They have more specific conditions under which they thrive. Robusta, on the other hand, can actually be grown at sea level. They're resilient to pests, and they're higher in caffeine than Arabica. And they're like the other 30% of coffee production in the world, roughly. And so that's going to be funnier later, with Robusta being the more resilient option. But Robusta tends to be the one that it's higher in caffeine and Doesn't taste good.
Do you think the pests like don't think it tastes good either? That's why they're resilient.
Yeah, it's gotta be. Well, I think so. I think the Robusta, actually the higher caffeine content for pests is, you know, not scientific, but I think it's less tasty. And I think for diseases, the higher caffeine is antimicrobial. So I think it's less susceptible to pests and diseases, which is kind of nuts. Unfortunate that it's the one that tastes worse.
So is it better for you? Is that like what you're getting at? Or
I don't think it's better for you. No, they're just it's a higher caffeine and they're more resilient to like changes in temperature or changes in altitude or pests. So they're more easily grown. So like the idea, I guess, being behind all this could be maybe in the future, instead of Arabica, the tasty, you know, complex, the more common one, 70% of the world's production of coffee, maybe gets like affected by climate change, and this Robusta one doesn't as much. And so maybe Robusta gets more and more integrated, and we all just start drinking garbage coffee.
Yeah, I feel that.
You know, like maybe that's what happens. Who knows?
So you said they gotta like elevate the growing grounds for the coffee, right?
Yeah.
So what's gonna happen, you think, when like you can't really go any higher? Are we gonna do like inside growing like grounds, you know what I'm saying?
Ooh,
like,
that's interesting.
What are those called? I don't know why the term is like slipping my mind right now.
A lab?
No. Isn't it just like greenhouses? That's what they're called, right? Just greenhouses. Oh my god.
That's something like that.
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. What, because climate change is, if these beans have to grow at a certain altitude, because at that altitude there are favorable conditions, and then the global average temperature gets a little higher. To meet those same conditions, these coffee plants are going to have to go higher up.
Yeah.
And how long they can be doing that, or how often they can afford to do that. The real answer is that a lot of these farms aren't going to be able to go 167 meters in altitude for a degree Celsius of change, because a lot of these are subsistence farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So they might not even be able to adapt to these things. They're the bigger companies that may be able to develop technologies or maybe be able to move their farms up, but a lot of these farmers are just where they are and where they've been for quite a while, so they might be hit by this in a very tough way. Eventually if you keep going up, you would reach the top of a mountain and there will be no growing there.
Yeah, can you imagine like all the moms like without coffee in the morning? Like, that'd be a scary place to live in, I feel like.
It'd be a scary place to live in. Yeah, if my professor every morning is the way they act when they say, don't talk to me until I've had my coffee.
Mm-hmm.
In a world where it's, don't talk to me until I've had my coffee, but there is no more coffee.
Oh my god.
Where did I get distracted? So the International Coffee Organization predicts that under certain scenarios, under the likely scenarios of climate change, coffee production will decrease by 10% compared to references without climate change. And the ICO has only considered abiotic factors. That's temperature, rain, humidity, stuff like that. So coffee is probably the most valuable tropical export crop, with an annual retail value of approximately $90 billion.
Woo.
Not unsubstantial. And already Arabica prices have increased by 160%. That was from 2009 to 2011, and that was for a lot of reasons, including technology changes, overproduction, some farmers leaving their farms. Another reason for that increase is increasing temperatures. And here's the fun one, damages by pests and diseases. This is the part that kind of I didn't think about before reading this. This was the less intuitive part to me. These are the biotic stressors. And this, Bree, what I want you to do is look up coffee berry borer. If you would, please.
If I would.
This is the, did you find it?
Oh, he's kind of cute. He looks like.
This is the.
I don't know. He looks like a bug that would like be like a pet if bugs could be pets.
I know exactly what you mean. And I'm glad you said that because it is adorable. What the pictures we're looking at is the bug that lives in coffee plants and is essentially a pest and can ruin the cherries, ruin the seeds. And they honestly look like if a coffee bean were wearing a hoodie.
You're not wrong.
It looks so adorable.
Yeah.
Bugs usually aren't cute, but this thing, and it knows where the good stuff is. It's going for the coffee. It's going for the caffeine.
Right, don't talk to him until he's had his coffee.
It's kidding, that joke. Dang it!
You know what I was just thinking that the title of the article you said, like, some like it hot.
Sure.
I like my bean water iced, I think, a little more, but...
Okay. So you'd be the others that don't like it. You'd be the some that don't like it hot.
Right, yeah.
But you drink hot coffee, don't you?
Occasionally. I dabble in it.
So, like, some kind of like it hot.
Yeah.
Some dabble in hot. Sure. So I think I said it earlier, but this is called the bug is called the coffee bearer borer.
That's not what it's called.
What did I say?
You said coffee bearer borer.
Fuck. It's a horrible word. It's not what it's called. It's called the coffee berry borer.
Yeah.
That's what people are calling it, but the scientific name is H. hampei, and it lives inside of these coffee plants, and they don't like Robusta as much because it has more caffeine. And diseases don't like it as much because it's antimicrobial. So, they generally live in Arabica, according to this paper. 1 degree Celsius increase in growing and the air temperature would lead to faster development, number of generations per fruiting season, and a shift in the geographical range of this bug. So, with temperature going up, with average temperatures going up, these bugs are going to have... are going to be more prolific, are going to be coming out more, are going to be spreading out more, and are going to be boinking more to produce more offspring. Mm. And so with this temperature change, they're going to have latitudinal and altitudinal range increased. And this is already seen in Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania. The, what are we going to call this guy? The bean bug? I'll call him the bean bug because I don't want to say H. hampei or coffee berry borer. The bean bug is found right now at elevations 300 meters higher than where it was 10 years ago. So already we're seeing that these bugs are kind of spreading out more. And with increased temperatures, they're going to be spreading out more and more. The number of generations per fruiting season will increase, will pretty much double is what the article is saying. And here's a weird part is that these borers, the bean bug, When they spread their latitudinal and altitudinal range, when they start living in other places, they're not going to have as many natural predators in those new places. So it's like a double kicker is that now they're going to be less hunted than they were in their original places. And so that's the what. We have these coffee plants that aren't going to be able to grow with these abiotic and biotic stressors. And so that's kind of the what. And so, like, I guess, why does this matter? Because coffee is a particularly sensitive crop. And one example of how people are going to have to, if they're able to, they're going to have to adapt. But another reason why this is so important is 70% of the world's commercial coffee production is done by impoverished small-scale farmers. And in total, 120 million people depend directly or indirectly on coffee for their subsistence. So a lot of these farmers, I think I said it earlier, are going to have trouble adapting because they're not, you know, it's not big coffee, it's a family. And with that also being the case, arid and semi-arid areas are going to expand by up to 8% by 2080, corresponding to about 60 to 90 million hectares of agriculturally productive land being arid. And with this less fertile area for growing, a lot of these farmers might not be able to continue growing crops like coffee, but they might have to prioritize like food crops for them, for their families, or whatever else is selling more.
Mm.
But yeah, so that's the what, that's the why it's important. It's going to be a little harder for these farmers than it is for big companies, but it's a very sensitive crop and it's going to be affected. I hope that all made sense. That was a lot.
A lot of tongue twisters there, I'd say.
A lot of tongue twisters. My tongue is tired.
Arid area.
Arid area is my least favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's abiotic stressors with temperature. There's biotic with these bean bugs, cute as they are. But yeah, it's important. I mean, one solution that has been researched a little bit is growing these, having these coffee farms be under shade. So having trees that'll shade these. And it's supposed to be able to reduce the growing temperature of these plants, so they're not going to be as susceptible to these bugs and not as susceptible to the detriment of these changing temperatures. So it'd be like trees around them that are providing shade and cooling them down a little bit.
Mm.
But there's like more research that needs to be done with that. So yeah, that's kind of the state of why, how coffee is going to be affected by climate change. Yeah, what do you have for me to learn?
What do I have? Oh, let's...
Hold on, let me get my pencil and my paper.
Let's unravel this.
Hold on, yeah, let's... Here. Shit.
Stop.
All right.
Okay.
I'm ready.
So I kind of wanted to talk about sustainable practices of coffee companies that we hear about like every day and like we drink every day. So I was reading up on this collaborative effort known as the Sustainable Coffee Challenge, which is an effort of companies, governments, non-government organizations, and researchers. And it's a call to action led by Conservation International to make coffee the world's first sustainable agricultural product. I mean, at least that's what they're attempting. And I read this, you know, pretty interesting PDF talking about like how they're going to make it the first sustainable agricultural product. And they have 15 intervention pathways. And the examples that really like made sense to me, which I think they should work on, is improving labor conditions, conserving water and forests, and investing in consumer education and awareness. Because I know a lot of people drink coffee, but they have like no idea where it's being sourced from and like whether or not it's sustainable. Some of the major retailers included in this collaborative effort include McDonald's, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, and Walmart.
The heavy hitters. All of them.
Heavy hitters.
It's all of them. They're all there.
But yeah, so that was an interesting sustainable initiative on behalf of a lot of huge companies. So like Starbucks specifically, some of their past was like pretty unsustainable. One of the processes that is unsustainable in coffee farming is when the soaking of the coffee cherry in water happens, a breakdown of fruit mucilage occurs, which is a glue-like substance produced by all plants and organisms almost. And then this breaking down of that begins a process called eutrophication, where excessive nutrients cause oxygen depletion in local water sources. And this kills organisms like algae, which is a very important part of the food chain for a lot of aquatic organisms and is the source of much of the Earth's oxygen. So the process of harvesting and soaking the coffee itself can be damaging to like ecosystems if algae is being like killed in the local water sources and the oxygen.
Wait, so they're washing these things in local water sources?
Yeah. Well, they're soaking it to break down the glue-like substance.
In like a lake?
It's just literally wherever they're farming. So like, you know, a lot of these places where we farm coffee are like poorer areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, it's just literally wherever the farming of the coffee is happening. And not so much of the environment, something that Starbucks was doing that was super unsustainable back in 2008. They were running tap water nonstop, which was wasting 23.4 million liters of water daily. And this was found by like a newspaper just like trying to like figure out like if Starbucks was sustainable or not. It's called The Sun. Management claimed that running the water nonstop in what is known as a dipper well, where in Starbucks the utensils are washed to prevent, like, they said it would prevent germs from breeding in the taps if they ran the tap water nonstop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then water companies and green activists argued that that's nonsense.
Yeah. I think I know the reasoning they're coming from. How, like, streams that are moving have less, like, bacteria, but where things are still mm-hmm. more, like, life can grow, I guess. But I don't think that's how it works in pipes.
No, yeah, what?
And all the time?
Yeah. So that was back in 2008, and then they, like, I'm pretty sure they, like, don't do that anymore. But,
Can you imagine walking into a Starbucks and everything that pours water is pouring water?
Yeah, no. Jeez.
What can I get for you? Quick.
And they all know, we all know that Starbucks, like, obviously, like, there's so many plastic straws being created, like, over 2 billion a year by them.
Mm-hmm.
Did
they ever get the biodegradable ones?
I think they're currently trying to implement that. I literally was at Starbucks, like, today, and they don't. It was a plastic straw. Okay. But more recently, since then, they have began selling reusable cups and have installed recycling bins in every store. And some evidence shows that their green practices are currently in the lead, like, compared to others in the coffee industry on, like, a huge scale. Mm. So, like, as compared to Dunkin' Donuts or other major coffee places. And so, yeah, they've gotten better, but, I mean, they still, you know, need to get rid of, like, the plastic straws. And, I mean, in terms of fair trade, Starbucks, like, isn't, like, for as big as it is, they don't have enough fair trade coffee. I was trying to, like, figure out a lot of companies, like Duncan was saying, were Rainforest Alliance certified, which could easily be confused with fair trade. And fair trade is giving producers guaranteed prices for their products, which is designed to tackle the poverty. The Rainforest Alliance certification focuses on how the farms are managed and if they meet a sustainable agricultural standard. So it's not so much like the treatment of the people that are working there. So I feel like a lot of these companies are trying to, like, kind of sugarcoat if they're coffee is, like, actually sustainably sourced or not.
Of course.
By just making it sound better, like,
yeah,
you know. From what I found, Dunkin's espresso is 100% Rainforest Alliance certified. Only 30% of their dark roast is Rainforest Alliance certified, as compared to their espresso, which is 100%.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I feel like they should really work to make it 100%, because, I mean, Dunkin' is such a huge, like, company, and, like, obviously they're producing so much coffee. So they're definitely contributing to, I mean, unsustainable farming practices.
Yeah.
And another initiative Dunkin's trying to do, though, on the positive side, is they're trying to eliminate those awful styrofoam cups they use by 2020. Yeah, they just need to, like, work on, like, sourcing sustainably, as well as, like, promoting sustainable practices with their consumers, because, like, the styrofoam cups are just kind of inexcusable, you know.
Yeah. And honestly, the quicker that they decide to source these more sustainably, the better, because, like, if they're going to these big companies that are already huge, or that are giving these farmers a bad deal, when climate change, when those factors start to hinder coffee production, it's not going to hit those big farms as much. It's going to hit the little farms. And if these little farms already aren't getting the support that they need, when the temperature changes, it's going to be even harder for them if they didn't have the support of these people sourcing their coffee. If people are supporting them now, then when the change comes, I feel like there's a better chance that they adapt. Because these bigger companies are already going to be able to do it. Easy. The little guy always gets the short straw, the short metal straw. You want to go to some listener cues?
I would be delighted to do that.
Maybe this one's for you. This first one's for you. Will this affect my Frappuccinos?
Yes. Even though, although your Frappuccino is barely coffee.
Rip.
But there you go. Yeah. Sorry if that hurt your feelings, but
I don't have any.
You're right. At this point, nothing's left.
Will this affect my Farmville? Yes. Also, yes.
I'm about to turn my phone off. I'm about to shut my laptop. I can't handle that.
I've changed my answer from yes, from what did I say the first? Fuck. No, it's not going to affect your Farmville. In fact, Farmville is going to be the only sanctuary we have left once we can't have coffee.
It'll be like a memorial to what used to be, you know?
Mm-hmm. That'll be, we'll put on our VR goggles, we'll go into Farmville, and we'll teach our kids and our kids' kids what farming used to be like, because now we don't have it anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. What crops / foods will we see disappear first with climate change? What food industries are particularly vulnerable? And I did a little bit of reading on this one, because this was a good ask question. One of the biggest ones, weirdly enough, at least in the United States, is corn. By the end of the 21st century, everything going the way that it is right now, there's an estimate that in Iowa, there will be a 15 to 50% decrease in corn production. So that's beyond substantial. That's kind of nuts. Another one is wheat, about 8%. With the 1 degree Celsius rise. Peaches are another big one because they need what's called chilling hours, where they need a certain amount of hours during the winter. They need a certain amount of cold.
Mm-hmm.
And the study says that only 10% of where they're grown right now in California will reliably have that chilling.
What about in Georgia?
I don't know. That's a good question. This study was only in California, but I can only imagine Georgia would see something similar.
Yeah.
And then coffee is the other one. It's very sensitive. Right at the equator, right near the equator. So they're going to be getting those high heats soon. And it's just it's a sensitive plant. Well, Robusta is. And here's the thing. Arabica is going to get exterminated, right? Let's live in a world where Arabica is exterminated. Robusta is just going to be sitting on a throne waiting for us, like,
and we'll just kind of be like, all right, I guess.
All right, Robusta is going to be, you couldn't live with your failure, and where did that bring you? Back to me. Robusta is just like, yeah, everyone looks at it like, yeah,
is Robusta like what hipsters drink and they're like, yeah, this is the good stuff. You guys are probably missing out.
You're probably a little bit right about that.
How, like people, some people drink like, no, PBR. This is, you don't, yeah.
It's complex. You don't get it. No, dude, it tastes like my car tire. It tastes like my Honda Civic tire. I don't know. It's fine. Probably. I've actually never had it, but I've only heard.
What if we get like angry comments from Robusta enthusiasts?
Big Robusta fans? Oh, I bet we will. I don't want to roast Robusta. Robustans. Not to make a bad coffee joke. I don't want to roast it, but like it is the more resilient. It is the stronger biological option for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those are our listeners. I actually have another one here. This one might be, yes. Will there still be boiled peanuts after the eco-apocalypse? And now another interesting one. Because peanuts are a crop that are grown in the American Southeast and Texas. And I think if I'm not mistaken, there's been a lot of droughts increasingly. And, you know, with climate change, if droughts do increase, which I think the research is pointing that way, we might have less peanuts. We will we'll be able to boil them easier with all that heat. But yeah, I think peanuts might be decreasing. And are you ready for the final one?
Yes.
As the dolphin's domain increases...
Jesus, who said that?
I can't believe that. As the dolphin domain increases and humanity's land disappears, what guerrilla tactics will we have to resort to in our fight for available farmlands?
Wow, I'm at a loss.
I guess, like, if you had to think of how you wanted to fight dolphins, not like a dolphin, but like the dolphins, how would you do
like
it?
Like the Miami Dolphins?
They'd be in Miami as well. Not the team would, they'd be on our side.
I feel like they'd switch sides to the actual dolphins.
You think they'd team up with the ant with the mammals, huh?
Yeah.
I think it's a possibility. I don't know.
You know what I would say to that, what I would say to that person who asked that question? Don't talk to me until I've had my coffee.
Wow. Very nice. I, however, would say dolphins would win. I don't know.
I mean, obviously. Goes without saying.
I think, so we have a little more time we could fill up if we wanted to. I just wanted to, so I've been on Twitter. I want to have a segment where I go on Twitter. I need to figure out a name for it. This has nothing to do with coffee. This has nothing to do with crops. Well, it has a little bit to do with deforestation, I think. There's this dude named Mark Kelly running for Senate, the Senate seat, in Arizona. And he is aware of climate change, and he's making it part of his platform. Also, fun fact about Mark Kelly, he's been in space. He's an astronaut.
Whoa.
Which is cool. Yeah.
Sick, is he a space cowboy?
He's a space cowboy, basically.
Basically.
If only he were from Texas. Mm.
But like, I feel like there's cowboys in Arizona.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You're right. Let me pull up his Wikipedia real quick, because it's bug wild. Scroll past my coffee bug. Mark Kelly. Yeah, he could be a cowboy. Mark Kelly.
Definitely.
Yeah, so he's been in space. This is his tweet. Between my first and fourth trips to space, huge flex, just immediately flexing on everyone.
Jesus.
Between my first and fourth trips to space, I witnessed significant deforestation and other changes in our planet in just 10 years. As an engineer and an astronaut, I value science and data, and that's the approach I'll bring to tackling climate change. So first of all, thank you, Mark Kelly. I do love that. The fact that he is saying from space, I have seen deforestation happening.
That's insane.
Is monumental. And so, like, it's almost too wild for you to have said it. It's almost too, it's like too much. Like, do you think he was really in space? Like, huh?
Yeah, no, the deforestation is literally like that noticeable at this point.
Is it really? Like, you could, this guy's only been in space 4 times. It sounds like maybe he's been more, but he noticed that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Fuck wild. He, let's talk about Mark Kelly for a second. Oh, he has a twin who's also an astronaut. This guy is so cool. This guy is so monumentally cool. So apparently he went to, okay, no, his brother went up into space, right, for a year. And he didn't. His brother went up in space, he didn't. When his brother came back, the two of them were studied, because they're twins, about the physical differences caused by living in space versus on Earth.
That's so crazy.
Why are you running for Senate? I mean, I take it back. I need you, Mark Kelly, I need you running for Senate.
Space,
you're
cowboy.
Incredible.
We're actually endorsing him.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I'd do it easy. Last thing I read that I thought might be fun to talk about is a Vice article.
Here goes.
New report suggests high likelihood of human civilization coming to an end starting in 2050. What do you think about that? It seems like it should be followed by and dolphin civilization coming to a peak.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, at that point, like, I would want to be a dolphin because, like, it'd be so hot that you'd always want to be submerged in water, which I guess that's what's going to happen. So,
yeah.
Will we morph into dolphins over time? What if we, like, reverse, like, evolution reversed itself?
Oh, we went back into water creatures.
Yeah. I know, that's probably the most dumb, like, unscientific thing I've ever said.
I'd like to know more about it, though. I'd like to ask someone who would, the exact person that would scoff at that, I would love to ask. Oh my god, can you imagine?
Yeah.
You I mean, ask
is it,
and I'm
is
just
it really
looking
that in? Out of the ballpark? You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like... I don't know. Or we could just die off and then another... species
yeah.
with like
I mean
yeah
so the joke about this article is that it's just gonna end in 2050 according to another article, which by the way I haven't read the other article, but there's no way that it's saying that. They have to have misquoted it.
I don't know, Vice like always tells the truth. I'm just kidding. Wow, some wow. riveting discussions we've had today. I would say so
as well.
Yeah.
And me too, while I have been sipping my climate juice.
Your climate 9 o'clock bean water.
No bugs in sight.
Interesting. Well, I hope it's fair trade.
Probably.
Okay.
Gotta send a quick email, actually. Yeah, how do we usually end these?
Yeah, so for those of you who have inquired, the Tinder... It's in the works.
It's in the works. Easy. We're trying to get it nation. We're trying to get it global. A global Tinder going.
And I'm hoping that we match with the beef and dairy
please.
Network.
Please.
If you're listening, think that would be really flattering.
And Sawbones. If you'd like to follow our Instagram is No Planet B Cast. We changed our name. We are No Planet B Cast on Instagram and Twitter as well. Actually, we're No Planet B Cast on both. So,
well, we were No Planet B Cast before though on Twitter. So,
yes,
yeah.
So, No Planet B Cast on our Twitter and our Instagram. So if you like the episode, if you like the podcast, give us a 5-star review or tell your friends, however you choose to support. But, yeah, or just talk to us on Twitter and Instagram. Tell us you didn't like the episode. Tell us you liked the episode. Ask us a question. You know, bring up an argument. Or if you have someone who wants to be interviewed. We love talking to people who have listened to our episodes. We love talking to people who haven't. We're basically in this to learn and to teach along the way. Yeah, just interact with us. And yeah, it's fun. Good time.
Great time. Fabulous.
What else? What's our Instagram, Twitter, iTunes. We're on Spotify as well. Anything else? Any closing remarks?
Don't talk to us until we've had our coffee.
Hell yeah. All right, gang. We'll see you on the internet.